This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Good morning. New York City leaders this week announced the site of the infamous Stonewall Inn has been designated as an official historic landmark. The bar, which is in the Greenwich Village section of Manhattan, was the site of a police raid 46 years ago this weekend. The raid on the bar with a mainly gay and lesbian clientele sparked a riot which is itself seen as a landmark moment in the history of the LGBT civil rights movement.
But while people coming of age today are very much aware of current events surrounding gay rights, most notably the increasing acceptance and legality of same-sex marriage, Stonewall is still not a subject that gets a lot of ink in school history books. Wisconsin writer Ann Bossom's new book seeks to fill that gap. It is called Stonewall, Breaking Out in the Fight for Gay Rights. Ann Bossom is with us in the studio to share the story. Welcome back to the show.
Very happy to be here.
Nice to have you here. Let me start by asking about the creation of this book. What happened at a reading in South Dakota that sparked this book's beginning for you?
I have participated in the South Dakota Book Festival several times, and in 2010, actually I was at a book signing, and it was a quiet moment, and someone came up to me very privately and said, looking at all of my books which deal with social justice history, and saying, can't you write something like this for young people about gay rights history? And I had already been thinking about that topic, but I had never had someone approach me, and her question was so heartfelt and clearly came with an untold story that added to my motivation. You know, maybe I really can and should do this. And that same weekend, I learned about the death of Tyler Clementi, the young man at Rutgers University who had the just atrocious cyberbullying incident that prompted him to jump from the George Washington Bridge. And the combination of those things, plus about a five-year sort of – this would be a project for me to consider going on in my head. Those three things came together. It was like, that's it. No more Tylers. I'm going to write this book.
You also write that you had really wanted to write about Stonewall for a long time, even before that. So why was it so important for you to do that, even before South Dakota, even before Tyler's death?
Well, I've been writing for nearly 20 years now, and I seem to gravitate to the social justice theme. And it had become clear to me that we were really ignoring a tremendously important fight for social justice in this country by ignoring the fight for gay rights. And I began to wonder if I would be the right person to write that. I wondered if I would find a publisher who would publish it, if it was an even a feasible project to undertake.
Well, and in the end, I mean, you not only found a publisher, but you found a pretty major publisher.
I did. I am very fortunate to have collaborated with Viking on this. They have been extremely supportive from the moment I pitched the idea, and the book has turned out. You know, it's met my and exceeded my expectations.
Now, I think Stonewall, for many people, sits out there as a landmark moment in the history of gay rights. But for a lot of people, probably it kind of stops there. Like, what people might know about the battles of Concord and Lexington or the Treaty of Versailles. You were not so old when the Stonewall riots happened. What did you know, and maybe more importantly, what didn't you know as you set out to write this book?
Well, I didn't know very much. I would have been about 10 when the Stonewall riots happened, 10 or 11. And I was living in Virginia at the time.
Probably not a lot of coverage.
No,
in the news
not a
there.
Lot. Of, not a lot of coverage. Not a lot of coverage in New York City at the time. The homosexual community was so marginalized at that time that it wasn't really considered news that there was a gay riot in Greenwich Village. And so I lived in New York after college. I'm a graduate of Beloit College and lived in New York City and became familiar with the riots just as a general idea from living in New York. And I think had I been a member of the LGBT community, I would have been much more familiar with it because that is one of those touchstones of history that is the foundation of kind of the heritage that's passed on from one generation to the next. And I did not realize, for example, that the gay pride parades, which occur around the globe now in late June of every year, were originally established as a tribute to the Stonewall riots. And that's very well known within the gay community. And I'm really glad that I've been able to try to bring that history out into the open for all of us to appreciate. It's a fantastic story.
Well, and there is a lot that's kind of more subtle about what actually took place on that, you know, overnight between June 27th and 28, 1969, that people are probably not aware of. For example, I had no idea that there was an angle of this that involved the mafia.
No, nor did I. When I started the research, I had the impression that there was a raid at a gay bar, that it was one raid too many, and the riots that followed were triggered by this straightforward raid. And that was not the case at all. And I think most people have that misconception that this was just a gay bar raid that set off a spark that triggered riots. In fact, by the time of the riots in mid-1969, running a gay bar was not illegal. In New York City, going to a gay bar was not illegal. Dancing at a gay bar was not illegal.
All and these things had been illegal a couple of years
these
before.
These things had been illegal. They were in this gray area at the time when the Stonewall was opened in 1967. And the mafia was getting into the gay bar business at that time because since it was illegal, it created this opportunity for exploitation and moneymaking. And there was a wink and nod system that evolved with the police that allowed these bars to open and stay open through a payoff system. And that heritage was evolving by the time of the Stonewall riots. And the mafia still ran these bars, and they weren't necessarily illegal, but illegal behavior was going on at them. And this was a time when it was still very common to be in the closet because there was not legal protection that could keep you from losing your job, et cetera.
Right. The existence of a gay bar wasn't illegal and dancing at a gay bar wasn't illegal, but you could still easily be fired from your job.
Right. Being gay could get you in all kinds of trouble. And so this was being exploited at these mafia-run gay bars in Greenwich Village, and people were being blackmailed. And the police had become aware of this, and so these bars were being targeted by the police in an effort to try to stop this blackmailing. And the thought was to try to put the Stonewall out of business, not because it was doing the blackmailing, because that can be hard to prove, but because it had a kind of a sketchy liquor license. And it had set itself up in 1967 under this sort of sketchy legal code because it was trying to skirt under these laws that where it was still kind of a gray area, were they opening a legal business or not.
But at the same time, the idea was they would try to shut the Stonewall Inn down under the pretense that they were trying to deal with these sketchy liquor laws or the sketchy liquor business they were in. And at the same time, if closing it down meant that the blackmail would go away, then that –
Exactly. So it was kind of a roundabout way to shut down the blackmailing. And oh, by the way, the bar's going to end up being closed too.
But this distinction does not necessarily matter at all to the regular patrons of the Stonewall.
No, they're just ticked off. And they're old enough to have witnessed plenty of police raids and to have thought they were done. And one other thing that's often not known about the history is that this wasn't the first time the Stonewall had been raided by this operation. That had happened just a few days earlier. And so many of the people who were there Friday night had already witnessed a police raid on Tuesday night. And in contrast to the earlier raid, this one occurred after midnight on a Friday night under a full moon on a very hot evening, and all potential catalysts for trouble.
You went through a lot of different historical information about what had taken place that night. And what's interesting is there are seemingly a ton of archives of writings from people who were either there when the raids began or people who gravitated toward the raid towards the raid and the riots that ensued afterwards. What were the remarkable threads you found as you started examining these contemporary writings and perhaps speaking with people who were there that night?
I think that the threads that emerged from the historical record were almost uniformly full of rage. And just this fed-upness and this crystallizing moment came together right then, right there, and all of the factors fed into an uprising.
Were there particular challenges you ran into in writing about Stonewall for a younger audience?
Well, I was very fortunate to have a publisher who believed in the project and believed in telling the history unchecked. And my target audience is the teenage reader. I think we live in a world where they're encountering pretty sophisticated material, and I didn't feel constrained in being able to talk about this history in a straightforward and honest way.
And, of course, the book does come along as gay rights are very much a regular part of the news and a regular part of the landscape.
Absolutely. The book seems to be coming out at just the time when the readership might most want and appreciate the chance to learn this backstory to the current gay rights movement.
Well, and it's worth noting that the book does not end with the end of the Stonewall riots and their immediate aftermath. You do kind of go into some of the landmarks along the way for both gay rights and issues that the gay community faces in the years and the decades since.
Yeah, I felt that was very important. You know, we always try to simplify our history, and there's been an oversimplification about Stonewall that says, you know, this was the spark that started the gay rights movement. And that's not really true. There had been a movement for decades before that, and the movement would have continued without it. But Stonewall certainly was a catalyzing moment in turning what was a relatively small movement into a much larger one. But just as young people today aren't going to know about Stonewall, they're also not going to know about what happened in the three decades, four decades since. And I felt it was important to give that preview of what had come before and a sense of what had come after so that I really could bring the readers up to current times and also use the gay rights movement to illustrate the same ups and downs that every social justice movement has. It wasn't just this wonderful arc from Stonewall to marriage equality. There were a vast array of challenges along the way.
Right. I mean, it just the same way that it might be tempting to imagine the civil rights movement as everything up to Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech to all of a sudden things have changed. Stonewall is this big moment in 1969. I mean, you know, this is 45 years before marriage equality becomes a more common occurrence in this country.
Exactly. I always err on the side of giving the full context. And I think it makes the read that much more exciting, actually, because there really is this amazing arc of trial and tribulation and perseverance that helps you appreciate why the movement has been as successful as it has in recent years.
There is an audio version of this book, and that has not necessarily always happened with your books.
No, it's I've been very lucky this time because not only is there an audiobook, but it is a fantastic production from Listening Library, narrated by Tim Federle, who is an award-winning author and narrator. And this audio production has already gotten an Earphones Award from Audiophile. You know, I actually have the text pretty much memorized. That's true of any author by the time they get to a published book. But I put in Tim's audiobook and I couldn't turn it off. He just pulled me right in. I wanted to hear his voice all the way through to the final words.
Follow the narrow street back to the breathing spot of 7th Avenue South. Lots of streets meet here. Lots of open space celebrates the junctures. Even a park, Christopher Park. Easy to remember, Christopher Street, Christopher Park. That door where people pause, then enter? Yes, that's important. Pay attention. That's the Stonewall. The Stonewall Inn. Pay attention. History walks through that door.
Would you hope that the woman who spoke with you in South Dakota knows about this book?
Oh, I certainly hope so. And actually, when the South Dakota Book Festival heard about the book, they've invited me to come back to talk about it this fall in South Dakota. And that would truly complete the circle to be able to see this woman again. I would treasure that moment.
Well, Anne Bossom, it's great stuff. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Mitch.
Writer Anne Bossom lives in Beloit and is the author of 12 books. Her latest is for generally younger readers. It's called Stonewall, Breaking Out in the Fight for Gay Rights, published by Viking. There's also an audiobook as well, and you'll find a link to more about her and about Stonewall at WUWM.com.